Before we get started, I want to tell you about my sponsors, and it seems like people are excited to see that I've got sponsors here on Mixergy, to see that I'm actually starting to bring in some revenue with the work here on Mixergy. So thanks for the positive feedback, everyone. All right. And by the way, with each sponsor, because I don't want you to just hear a list of commercials, with each sponsor, I'm trying to do something unique, something that's designed just for the Mixergy audience. So here goes. Rich WP, the website that you go to get a new theme for your website, to make it look good, professional, easy to navigate, easy to communicate to your audience what you have to say. If you go and buy a Rich WP theme and send me the receipt within the next week, I will show you how I do my interviews here on Mixergy, and I'm going to help you get started doing your own interviews too. I'm going to spend, say, half hour to an hour on the phone with you, showing you how I do my interviews, how I get my guests, and helping you do the same thing for yourself, for your site. All right, next sponsor is Shopify. You know, you go to Shopify.com, you could create a store for yourself with just about, I can't imagine any feature that you would want that Shopify.com doesn't have. And I know that within 5 minutes you can be up and running with your own store. I know it because that's how long it took me to create a Shopify.com store. I'm out of breath the way that I'm reading these commercials. Let me take it a little slower. And I'm going to tell you that if you get a Shopify.com store in the next month and you send me a link to it, I will help you promote it on Mixergy.com, because I want you to be up and running with the store. I want you to experiment. I want you to start seeing some revenue for your business too. Okay, finally, Grasshopper. You know, Grasshopper.com is the company that you go to when you want a robust phone system with extensions, with all the features that you want. I actually did a few videos here on Mixergy where I highlighted each one of their big features. So you know what I'm doing with them, right? I'm opening myself up to phone calls from you, to get questions about your business, to find out what questions you have for me and for other guests here on Mixergy, because I want to help you build your business and I also want to see what's on your mind. So I'm not restricting this. Any business questions that you have, I'll be happy to answer or take to my upcoming guests here on Mixergy. Look for details on that on Mixergy.com. All right, finally, you might, if you're watching the video and not just listening to the audio, you might notice behind me that I'm in a new office. That's because I had a little bit of internet trouble and I've got a new office here for the day at least. So that's why the background's different. Those are my sponsors. Thank you all for watching and for the great emails. Here's my interview. Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner, founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. And you guys know that I love talking to entrepreneurs who build profitable businesses, because you know what? Building a business with the idea that someday maybe you'll sell before the whole thing collapses, and until that day you can survive by losing money every day. That doesn't feel like a real business to me. Maybe I'm not meant for greatness, but to me, profits and solid revenue gives me a sense of comfort, which is why I'm really excited to talk to today's interviewee. His name is Kevin Hale. Kevin is the co-founder of WooFoo, and WooFoo is actually, you guys were profitable, Kevin, within 9 months, right?
Yes, I'm really excited about it. We were able to build a prototype within like a 3 months, and then we were able to get live within 6 months.
And what is WooFoo?
WooFoo is an online HTML form builder, and we basically strive to be the easiest way to collect information over the other internet. We help you create contact forms, design online surveys, power event registrations, and power simple online transactions.
Okay, and I use this on my site. Anyone who wants to contact me can go over to mixergy.com/contact, and the form on my site is actually a WooFoo form where you can enter your name, your email address, and whatever message you have for me. And I only did that because people kept demanding it. I thought they wanted a link to my email address so that they can use whatever email browser they wanted. But no, they kept insisting on a form. And then I tried getting a plugin for WordPress that did the form. I tried creating the form myself, because how hard is it to code up a form? And all those things were just such a headache that it just wasn't worth it for me. I went to WooFoo and I got a form that just did just about anything. Now, what is it? I can go on and talk to people about why I chose WooFoo, but what is it, as the guy who designed it, what is it that makes WooFoo beyond this? What is it that makes WooFoo so attractive to websites like me?
Well, one of the big things we try to focus on is ease of use. Like, there are lots of solutions out there. You can use any number of, like, whether you hire out to someone, sort of build it yourself, or use a lot of other services to create or collect information. It becomes really difficult when you start realizing all the different components that are involved: database, scripting, validation, and then preventing spam and all those sort of sources. And so when you go to WooFoo, what you'll notice is that it's very powerful software that has lots and lots of features, but the ease of use is sort of, it actually looks like it's kind of like designed by Fisher Price. So like anybody without any programming experience can sort of build a very complicated sort of data schema and collect that information and adjust it live and see their changes happen in real time. And so people really love that. And you can create reporting and export the data and take it with you. And it's all in the cloud and we manage it for you. And we actually have a lot of people say, wow, I put a WooFoo form up and we've seen conversion rates increase. Our lead generation is up. You know, it's way better than just having an email on there, because a lot of people are sort of like hesitant about, like, especially if they're not on their normal sort of email machine, to have to like open up a window or, you know, set up something else or open up Gmail. They can do it right there through WooFoo and it goes directly to you and then you find it in your inbox.
All right. I love what you said there, that it looks like it's designed by Fisher Price. It's dead easy to use. And you're the guy who designed it, right?
Yes, I do. All the design and most of the copywriting is done by myself.
Okay, I want to come back to it later on in the interview about how you designed it, how you keep it so simple. I know that to design something simple is hard work and it takes you a long time, so that you save me some time when I use a site. But before we get into that, how are you making money? Where's the money coming in?
Oh, WooFoo is based on a freemium model. So it's monthly subscriptions that are on tiered plans. We offer a free plan with 3 forms. You can collect up to 100 entries a month. And for a lot of people, that's like perfect for them, for simple contact form. For those who want more power, like payment integration, SSL for encryption, be able to create more forms and collect more entries per month, and sort of removing the branding from the confirmation page. We offer those options there and sort of tiers up, and it scales out to exactly what your company needs, and there's no contract, so you can upgrade or downgrade whenever you need it.
And actually, I'm about ready to hit the limit on the free version. I think I'm now getting 95 form submits a month, so 95 emails are coming to me through the contact form that you guys set up, and I think once I hit 100, I'm going to have to start paying you guys.
Yeah.
And what's the payment? What's the price for going beyond 100, the first level up?
$9.95 a month. And then the level after that is $24.95 a month, and then $69.95, and then $199.95.
What's the breakdown percentage-wise of how many people are taking the cheaper offer versus the most expensive?
I can't share that with you, but we it's on average with, or actually a little bit above average of what you see in most freemium models, business models, but exact numbers.
Well, what's the average? What are you seeing from other people?
From other people, it depends on what you do. So like if you're like a kid's social network, you can get like 15 to 20%. Other traditional stuff ranges from 3 to 5%.
What are we talking about? 3 to 5% conversion from free to paid, or 3 to 5%? Oh, I see. So can you give me a sense of how many people convert from free to paid? You can't give me that. Can you give me the breakdown of how many, of what percentage of people buy the cheaper version versus the more expensive version?
Our most popular plan is the middle bona fide plan.
Okay. All right. And what's the most profitable for you? The one that brings in the most revenue?
Probably the most expensive plan.
The most expensive one. So you get fewer people. Actually, Neil Patel recently blogged about that, and he said that with one of his sites, I think it was Crazy Egg, he should probably spend more time on the fewer people who are spending a lot of money on his site and forget the majority of people who are taking
a cheaper offer. That's actually based on the premise from The Ultimate Question. So Fred Reichel, he talks a lot about that. Like the people you should emphasize sort of your relationship building skills is on those higher sort of levels. Like the airlines, like focusing on your business class airline people. It's a very interesting policy. We had actually thought about that when we started doing some relationship type of marketing stuff in terms of like thank you cards. We had started writing Christmas cards to all our users. So our first year that we launched, we wrote Christmas cards to all of our paying customers, and it took us like 8 hours to write them all out by hand. And then, our customers really loved that. The second year, we had so many more customers, it was impossible for just the three of us to do that at that time. So we decided to focus just on the higher end people for those Christmas cards. And it ended up happening in January of that year. One of our customers wrote, she's like, I really loved you guys, and it was really nice touch that you guys sent me a Christmas card, and I missed out on it, you know, this following year. I was kind of disappointed. So we sent him something, and we had to rethink the whole problem. It was like, this isn't going to scale properly. So we've changed it to, we just stopped sending Christmas cards, and we focus on regularly sending out thank you cards. So every week, we have one meeting a week on Fridays, and we get together, and everyone in the company has only sort of two things that they have to do. Everyone has to do customer support, and everyone has to thank the people that basically pay their paycheck. And so everyone writes about 10 thank you cards to customers based on a list that comes in, how long they've been with us, and then they just go out. So every week we just churn them out and, you know, say thanks.
And I love that you guys do that, by the way.
It's been our users really like it, and it constantly reminds us sort of like the whole reason that we're sort of like have the success that we do. Like, it never gets to our heads. It keeps us very humble.
Do you measure loyalty based on those cards? Have you done any experiments to see if people stay longer
actually,
or upgrade because of them?
Do that. So one of the things we'd like to do is, like, we are tracking who we do send cards to and don't send cards to, but we haven't done too much more outside of sort of diving into the numbers to see how they sort of affect things. We just know that, like, the users really appreciate it, and we see that come back through support, and we see it in sort of the word of mouth that sort of generates from other people.
Okay, and I see that in the live chat, people are asking me if I'm seeing the chat on justin.tv, where our show is. Actually, no, I got to be honest, I don't know where that is. I'll look for it throughout the interview, and hopefully I'll be able to jump in on what you guys... Oh, no, you know what? They're writing too much. I cannot keep track of what's going on in the chat room on justin.tv. Talk amongst yourselves. We'll have to figure out a solution for me in the future. Wow, we're getting a lot of comments here. How profitable are you? How much money are you guys making?
I can't share that, but we're doing really well. There's 7 of us, and like I said, we've been actually increasing revenues on average of greater than 10% month over month since we launched. And so,
can you give us a sense? Are you in the hundreds of thousands in sales? Are you in the millions? You can't give me a sense of that. Now, you're venture backed though, right? So they don't want to see you guys make money.
We're not venture backed. We have some angel funding and we have some seed funding from Y Combinator, and they basically are very hands off, and they trust us to do what we do best. And so they like what they see, and they're excited about where we're going to take it and what we're going to do in the future.
Can you tell us how much money you guys have in funding?
Yes. So we took $18,000 from Y Combinator, and then we took an additional $100,000. From 2 angel investors.
And what's their vision for the business? Are they looking to sell it? Are they hoping that you guys will just keep churning out profits?
I think you'd be surprised at how angels are usually pretty hands-off. Like, since they invest in so many other companies, it's hard for them to, like, you know, have a very specific agenda with every single one that they invest in, or sort of like micromanage them. Like, that's not an investor you should be interested in. They like the vision that we have for the company, and they're letting us run with it. And our vision is to grow it and make it as big as we possibly can, sort of expand out the resources, and you know, anything's possible. But right now our focus is focusing on currently, like, 5 major sort of focuses. Because in the beginning, like, Wufoo as a form builder, as you collect any kind of input, it can be anything, and that makes it very complicated and frustrating to sort of talk about with people in a very short amount of time. So we focus on contact forms, online surveys, event registrations, and simple online payments. And so we've been developing all these features, focusing on making us a much better survey provider and survey creator, and trying to go against services like Zoomerang and SurveyMonkey.
Why are surveys so big? I'm noticing a lot of people jump into that space.
Surveys are big because, you know, the most powerful weapon in a company is, like, information, right? And the best way you can get information is to get it from your users. And thanks to the internet, it's so much easier to sort of gather that stuff, and you don't have to have manpower on the ground and have people with clipboards, you know, have all this paper and then do data entry and process it all. When you can have a service that sort of processes that all for you, that makes it so much easier. And so our goal is to sort of, like, make it even easier for, like, secretaries or anybody at the lower end can sort of collect that information, or even the smaller teams, and then help them sort of guide their company properly with a proper...
I see. And also with a contact form, even on my site where I get a lot of inbound emails, I'm getting maybe, as you're seeing, maybe 100 a month. But with the survey, if I'm going to survey my audience, I'm going to get 100 an hour probably. People just sending me feedback. And that's going to mean that I'm going to quickly jump up and up in each of your pricing tiers, right?
Yes. Yes, definitely. So that's our goal and hope. But we have actually a lot of – it all depends on – sort of what people need. Like, people jump up and down based on all the different ways that we sort of stratify the tiers. So some people jump up because they need encryption, because their data needs to be protected in a very specific way. Some people want payment integration because they, you know, and it's very nice if you're doing sort of an event or a workshop, if you can take the payment right there at that process where they register for the event. So people use it for that. And then some people like it for the reporting. So we have these like really nice reporting features. We can design your own reports and graphs and then also embed those into your website. So,
What's the name Wufoo mean, by the way?
It's basically, I'm a big fan of Wu-Tang Clan and Foo Fighters, and that's how it got started. And so that domain was available. And one of the really interesting things about it is that two other founders, Chris and Ryan, they were huge fans of it. Until Ryan told his girlfriend at the time, he mentioned the name to her, and then like a week or so later, he asked her, "Do you remember what that, you know, what the name of the program was?" And she said, "I think it was Wufoo." And so after that, he was sold that like it's easy to remember. So be it.
What about spelling of it? I sometimes will type in W-O-O-F-O-O, W-U-F-O.
Google's really forgiving, and so it helps us out on that front. And
you said Google is very forgiving, right?
Yeah, it'll figure it out for most people. And we really haven't had too many problems or issues with that, with people sharing it. And a lot of people will sort of find it by going to someone's sort of survey or online forum, and they'll see the address inside of there. Also, you know, when other people invite people to come and fill out sort of the information.
I see. Yeah, actually, I'm guessing now that a lot of people, if they in a few months, if they forget who it was that I interviewed, the guy with the forms, they might come back to Mixergy's contact form and just see who I'm using. Okay, let's go back in time and figure out how you got here, and then we'll answer questions like the one that I'm getting from Chris Dritt, who wants to know how you guys are marketing, how you're getting users to the site. But before we even start out with your history, can you lower the volume on your side? I think we're getting a little bit of echo here.
All right, is that better?
Let's see. Testing 1, 2. Oh, so much better. Thanks. Okay, so you didn't start out creating forms. You started out hating forms, and you were in a different business. What was that business?
Yeah, I was born in need. Chris and I were working at the research department at a state-run university down in Florida, and we were constantly getting projects to do these little mini database applications that were really annoying. And then Chris's brother... was the first employee at a startup that did like document image scanning for like insurance companies. So at the time, we were just we were hating the sort of like mini stuff that people were asking us to do. And building a form, building a simple database app is not complicated if you know sort of basic programming skills. But the problem, it's tedious and all the requirements that are needed for it, and it's pretty repetitive. And so we figured there's got to be a way to set this up that people can help themselves, right, and sort of offload that info. And so we came up with all these different ideas and designs. The problem was at the time was we didn't have like sort of a nest egg to sit on to sort of build the software right up. So I had a background in publishing and writing and journalism, and I figured that after we had went to South by Southwest and we saw Jason Fried speak about how to do big things with small teams, that we were like, wow, there's no reason we can't do what they've done or what anybody else in this room is doing. Like, we're just as good as anyone else. So we're like, let's do what they do. We'll start building an audience, and from that audience, something will sort of, you know, be born from that. So we started a blog called Particle Tree. And Particle Tree was tutorials and articles about design, business, and the programming aspects of running sort of a web startup or trying to learn all the skills for it. And the articles did very well. We tried to publish regularly, and you know, as soon as we get off work, and then we constantly try to think of ideas and write the articles and put them up there. And what was interesting about our aspect is we saw a lot of tutorials being written, like how people write about programming code tutorials or business tutorials and stuff. And we noticed that these lack a lot of research or a lot about hearsay, and you wouldn't have links back, and they wouldn't document their sources properly. And I was like, we can do this in a way that's much better and much more professional. And so I used to basically get inverted pyramid content structure for how they do in newspapers, where you start with the most important information and work backwards. So most articles at the time, the tutorials, they'd start off with sort of like, this is how I built the program, and then have at the very bottom, here's the code to download it. And so we'd switch it up. We knew what people wanted most was see how it works. So we put a nice, you know, design demo of it, put the source code, and we said, this is how you use the source code. And at the end would be the explanation of all the goodies of like, this is how we program and how we came up with the idea. And the articles just did really well. And two of our articles, like back to back, got up on Slashdot. And it convinced Ryan, after we got like 100,000 people come and read an article in a day, that like we should be able to convert this into money somehow. We can just get at least like 1%, we should be able to make money. And so he quit his job right away. And then I quit my job. And we decided that we'll make a magazine. We'll make a magazine based on this, like the programming, the code, the design aspects, and the business sides of web startups. And we do interviews with other people, and do book reviews, and sort of set it up. And we called it Treehouse. And we said, I think we can do a publication schedule that only takes up 2 weeks of the month, and then we can use the rest of the month to program and write our software. So we built all this stuff up, and Chris kept his job at the time, actually, as we built the first issue to give out for free. And he was splitting his paycheck with Ryan and I. And he would actually was extremely cranky during that period. He would actually like come home from work, and he's like, I just been working in a cubicle all day. Show me what you got, and it better be good, because I'm angry. And so it was good stuff. We ended up doing... Can you speak, Andrew, just for a second?
You mean apart from this, from the...
Oh, no, I thought I lost you.
Oh, okay, yeah, I'm here. But you can see the video of me, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. But, you know what, actually, as long as we stop for a second, let's make sure that I'm understanding everything that you did up until here.
Okay.
You saw Jason Fried talk about how the first thing he did was build an audience, and then once he had an audience, when he launched his web app, he was able to tap that audience to convert them into customers of his web app. And he actually did an interview with me on Mixergy where he said the same thing, that first right. He got his audience, and then he didn't have to go and buy ads online to convert them into customers. And he didn't have to go and do surveys, or he didn't have to go and ask random people what they were looking for. He could survey his own audience and find out what they wanted out of a product. And so he was able to build a product cheaply and with his audience by building an audience first.
One of the really nice things about building an audience, though, is that you've already started a relationship with them, right? They trust you from the get-go. A lot of products where there is no audience developed, or you don't understand the founders, or you don't know about the stuff that they've done, you have no trust in them. So it's a lot harder, it's a lot more difficult for you to overcome sort of like wanting to try something out, give people the benefit of the doubt, etc. We actually had some trouble at launch of WooFoo, and it really played into effect sort of the audience and trust that we had gathered during that period. So we launched with like TechCrunch, and we had some misconfigurations with the servers, and the servers were crashing. And within like the second comment, you know, on TechCrunch, is like, I guess, you know, it had gone negative. And so thankfully, like, our users who had known us, like someone immediately said, like, I know these guys from Particle Tree. I was with them with the beta program. They know what they're doing. They're really good guys. They're going to overcome this. And it just immediately turned the tide for us, right? That's not something we did. That was our own audience and sort of fans. And so
you can't buy that kind of support.
You cannot buy it, and you can't fake it at all. People see it from a mile away. And we just have always tried to remember that.
Chris,
you know,
Dritt, who's watching us live, is asking, how many people did you have in your audience? How many people were reading your articles?
At the time with Particle Tree, with WooFoo, when WooFoo launched, it was about 25,000 subscribers to the feed.
To the RSS feed. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then how many people are coming to your website? My guess is maybe 50,000 on average a month, maybe.
I think something like...
Okay. So that's not huge. It's big for a blog, but it's not insurmountable.
Actually,
for
no.
Listening to
sorry,
us now.
It's like 100. It was like 100,000.
100,000.
100 to 120,000.
Because you were able to get into Slashdot and other aggregators, right?
Here's the thing: the growth curve is pretty linear. I mean, it slowly grows up over time. And so we had been writing articles for almost a year up to that point. So, and that was a lot of hard work. Like, our articles would take us 3 to 10 hours per article every time we put something up there. So they're heavily researched. We try to edit them very well. And
okay. And then when you launched Treehouse, that was with the idea that you were going to get into the publishing business, right?
Yeah. So we were do publishing, but we thought we could sell the issues, make enough money that Chris could quit. It would also buy us time on the second half of the month. So we were planning on bootstrapping WooFoo from the get-go. We were like, we have plans to get something created and out there, and we were hoping that Treehouse would work it. And over time, I think it would have worked, but we had committed ourselves to a six-month issue, and actually, after the first issue was out, we heard about Y Combinator, and we applied, and we made it in. And so after we got into Y Combinator, it allowed Chris to quit, and we were supposed to do that full time. So we actually had this very difficult problem where we were building the software, had our commitment to Treehouse and trying to do those issues, and then also have to worry about like getting the funding that we needed to. It was an extremely stressful time. I sort of wish we had known about Y Combinator like 1 month earlier, and we would have held off on Treehouse. But it was actually a really good experience because we made so many connections doing that magazine. And it prepped us for sort of like the importance of a publication. A lot of people think marketing is all about like pizzazz, right? But it's a lot of times it's a lot about hard work and predictable schedule of being able to put something out there that you really like. And it's no different than software management. If you're putting like a publication out, putting out code is the same thing. It's something you have to produce and take some time out, and you want to put it out there on a regular basis in order to keep the buzz from going away. And
how many paid subscribers did you have at Treehouse?
That's a good question. I think we had about 1,000, maybe. It was, like I said, like a month. And then after that, we just held back on it. And we said basically, like, after these 6 months, we're not going to be doing it anymore. We're going to have to hold off.
And you said it was a print publication?
No, it was an online PDF
you got
publication.
1,000 people to pay for a subscription to online content.
Yep.
How?
It was great. It was like 60 pages of content you couldn't get anywhere else. It was tutorials, one tutorial on design, one tutorial on programming, one like nice article from someone in the business field. We had really nice interviews with lots of different people that were really generous, book reviews. We had a cartoon, actually, and we had a marketplace for like ads for people to sort of put up job listings and such.
I love this, by the way. Chris Dritt, who's watching us on Justin.tv, is like a co-interviewer with me. He's asking great questions, so I'll ask them of you. He's saying, okay. So he wants to make sure that he's understanding this right. 1 year of audience building and then 6 months of development until launch?
Oh, yeah. We're still writing articles and stuff. Yeah, so we're also writing articles on Particle Tree while we were trying to put WooFoo out there. One really popular article was called Lightbox Gone Wild. It was one of the first articles to write about how you'd sort of have a modal lightbox for a web application. So there's one other guy that had written it for showing up really nice photos, like doing a zoom in on it, but no one had talked about like using it as an interface element. And so we showed some examples of that, and that just like took off. And actually that script and variations of that has been used in like web applications like ever since. So that's been like really exciting. And that was during the period when we were working on WooFoo. That was some of the stuff that we came up with.
The script that you created is now being used on other web apps.
Lots of different ones. And there's variations of it. People have like created their own versions, and there's like it's really crazy. Yeah.
All right. For the people who are watching us because they're fans of news.ycombinator.com, let's tell them how you got into Y Combinator. What was the whole experience like?
We actually had a very funny experience with Y Combinator. When we applied, we actually applied with two different ideas. And they told us to prepare for both.
We lost your feed for a second there, but you were saying you applied with two different... Can you start it off with you applied for two different ideas?
Yeah, we applied with two different ideas. And we had asked them, should we prepare for both of them, or is it one that you're more interested in? They said, like, yeah, prepare for both. So we spent all this time preparing for two different ideas, and then it turned out when we got there, they're like, we're not interested in the second one. The second one was like some kind of affiliate link program marketplace kind of idea. And the other one was this idea. It was actually, WooFoo started off as an idea as a content manager that you can sort of have, we called it reverse, it was a really bad description is like reversible forms. So like forms that you can also collect on the back end, but also to the front. So a comment form is something you collect publicly, and then you can also have a back end where you enter data and stuff. Anyway, it turns out during that interview, Paul Graham actually said, "You mean just like a form builder?" And we were like, no, we want to be in content management. And thank God for them, because like they were like, no, I think you should do form building, and had us do some research stuff. And another thing, you know, because when we had looked at other form builders, we were like, all these people are crappy, and we don't want to be in that space, not realizing that's the opportunity, right? Because we were looking at like WordPress and Movable Type at the time. We're like, we want to be in that space because we can do as well as them, not realizing that's a crowded space that's difficult to get into. So that was really fortunate for us. But that interview process, it's only like, you're only in there for like 7 minutes, and the three of us are in there, and we actually felt like we had done really badly, because we were in there, and so it's RTM, who's Robert Morris, there's Paul Graham, there's Jessica Livingston, and Trevor Blackwell, and they're the guys who run Y Combinator, and they're doing the interview, and Jessica, when she introduced them, and she's like this really like lovable mom character, she's like, don't forget to let me take a picture of your group so that when we make the decision to see that we'll have your faces and stuff. And we go through the interview process, and we actually are arguing because we don't like the idea that they're trying to convert us to, and we're giving our points out. And it ended up being that this is what they really liked about us. And I remember Trevor sitting on his laptop, and he's like typing away and stuff, but he won't share his laptop. But then, like, he's like, Chris is just like wondering what it was. And then Robert, in the middle of it, like just gets up and walks away. I think he was to use the bathroom, but we're like, where are you going? There's not much time in the interview. And then we leave, and they didn't even take our picture. So we're like, we don't have this. And they were supposed to call by like 45 minutes after a certain time at like 10 p.m. that night, and we didn't get the call until like an hour and a half in. And so Chris had already started flying back to go back to his job because he had to work the next day. And then Ryan and I were finishing up an issue of Treehouse, and we got the call. And so it was completely surprising to us. We thought we had the worst interview ever. And as I've talked to other Y Combinator entries, like they have all had all different kinds of experiences where they've gone from arguing to like that, it was like super easy and they had a good time, they're laughing and having stuff. So that I have no real advice to tell people about how to go. I think it's just be relaxed and be yourself, and that's about it, because they'll throw like anything and everything at you. And mostly just try to be relaxed and just like believe and trust in what you do and do well, and they'll like that.
Were you at all intimidated by the group there? Because beyond being investors, there are people who you'd read, who you'd heard about for a long time.
A bit.
You were reading Paul Graham's essays, right? You read Jessica's book.
Oh, that's what led us to them. And I think it's important. I don't know. They're the most humble and like super friendly people. Like, they're very warm-hearted, like no ulterior motives. They don't speak like any kind of investor you will ever meet. And so what they're really looking for is just people they want to hang out with for 4 months intensely, right? And that's really all about personality and being fun. Like, they trust that you're smart, and they want you to show off that, you know, that you're smart just in the way you sort of talk. But
how did you show off that you were smart in a 7-minute conversation?
Excuse me?
How do you show off that you're smart in a 7-minute conversation?
I think it's like, you know, it's anything from grammar to diction, or if they actually explain something, like, you know your stuff. And it's all little things. Like, it's no different than a date, right? If you're on a first date with someone, you know pretty quickly. It's not like several hours into the date that you realize that you don't want to be with this person. You'll find out like within 5 to 10 minutes whether this person's decent or not.
And how much money do they give you guys?
$18,000. That's seed money.
Now, it sounds like you're telling me that that's significant. That was a significant amount of money for you.
That we took that, we rented out a townhouse, and we holed up and didn't do anything else. We cooked Easy Mac and ramen for 3 months, built a prototype, and then showed it off to investors, I think, in March. And then we met with VCs and angel investors all through April. And by the end of April, we secured our funding to get us the profitability.
But $18,000, couldn't you just have taken out a loan on your credit cards, a cash advance?
I agree with you. You can definitely raise that kind of money. But here's the thing. they have connections like you'll never believe. You have a different sort of experience with investors than other people that you will talk with, and the opportunities to sit in a room full of other investors to pitch your product, you will not get for $18,000. You can't give that money to anyone to just sit in a room with like Sequoia and et cetera. You know, Homer Wimblad and Kleiner Perkins, et cetera. You don't get that benefit of the doubt. And at that time, we were only the second session ever, right? Now they have to do 2 days worth of investor days just to cover all the investors that want to show up to it. And I think they have even like private one-on-ones with Sequoia also, like as a coaching, just to sort of like do an example pitch with a Sequoia partner and sort of, you know, see how well you'll do. And sort of,
no question about it.
It's an amazing opportunity.
If they charged you to be in Y Combinator, if they said, look, you're a startup, you're hungry, pay us $18,000. We're not going to give you $18,000. You
definitely
pay. Of course you would pay and you would get it. But it sounds like you were hungry for the money and you needed the money. Why? And you were bootstrapping and building a magazine on the side so that one day you can build WooFoo. Why didn't you just go and take a loan out for $18,000 and build WooFoo on your own?
There was obligations also at home. So we were based in Florida, and you know, even if you got the loan money, you still have girlfriends that you're tied to. Like, us getting the Y Combinator meant we had to go across the country and leave everything behind, and we were actually able to focus 100%. And so that was an opportunity we wouldn't have gotten. And it was an opportunity to learn so much. Like, their weekly dinners, they bring in lawyers, IP people, other investors, entrepreneurs. Like, it's inspiration. That's another thing that's incredibly useful. Weekly. In addition to that, you meet with other startups within that Y Combinator session that you wouldn't have met with. I am now lifelong friends with those people because we went through the same things. And to have that kind of camaraderie, you know, and outlet and opportunity to show off is just invaluable. Like, we would have been sitting at home and we could only show our stuff to ourselves, right? At Y Combinator, we come each night to our Thursday night dinner, and we're like, we have to have something to show because we don't want to be the, you know, the scrubs that show up and have nothing new to show. So that was like a huge, you know, motivation for us.
And how would you show it? Would you formally show it to everyone at the dinner, or would you just
show off the demo and people
to everybody, or one at a time, kind of sitting around the table?
It was really informal. It's like there's dinner that's being served. So in like the hour, you know, where there's snacks and stuff, you just sit down with like one of the guys from another startup and show off the stuff and get feedback from. It's completely organic. There's nothing formal about it. There is a practice presentation session. They call it like demo day or something like that, that they have like a month or a month and a half into it, and where everyone has to do a formal like sort of 3-minute show off. This is just what we do. So that gets you sort of prepared, and there are you know, and then you have also access to sort of seasoned investors who have gone through the whole process of building a company and startup, and you can sort of gauge what is important to worry about and what's not important from them, right? And that's also about it. That's just stuff that you just can't do on your own if you're just bootstrapping on. I have to say, it was spectacular. It just would have taken us forever. And I don't think we're so conservative that we would have taken like a normal loan for something like that. Like, we felt like we were, you know, we had a pacing for stuff. We were much more patient and much more methodical about sort of our approach to sort of building software and creating content. That we could have waited just in our other process and doing Treehouse.
Okay,
that was another asset to getting into YC. They saw that. We had, two of us had already quit, and one was splitting his paycheck. We were determined we're going to build this thing whether they're going to be a part of it or not. And so that was like a really, you know, exciting thing for them.
Okay, all right. Okay. And let's move on with the story. You then ended up with two angel investors who combined, I think you said, gave $100,000. Who are these guys?
It's actually Paul Graham and Paul Buchheit.
Oh, really? Oh, Paul Graham and Paul Buchheit, the founder of Gmail and FriendFeed and so many other things, they just kicked in personal funds, $50,000 each.
Yeah, we showed it off to them. They really liked it, and they were like, we want to put money in it, yeah.
Okay, how big is this market?
How big is the market for online
forms?
It's got to be. I mean, think about this. So there's every different category of software does this kind of data collection. So you have desktop software, right? So you have Microsoft Access, Microsoft Excel, Microsoft InfoPath, Adobe's in there with Lifecycle Designer. So they do it for high-end sort of enterprise markets. and
is
such.
There a way to measure it? Is there a way to measure how much money's in the
I don't think you can. And then there's just online surveys. How much money is there just for lead generation, right? How much money is there for like payment integration services? How much is there for like healthcare forms and education forms?
What's to keep somebody who's listening to us right now from being inspired by your story and deciding to go out and create the same thing
free? Our market is gigantic, and there's lots of people who are entering our space. There's actually a number when we launched. There's three or four other form builders, web-based form builders that also launched. And it has not affected us, but our goal is to do, you know, to do our flavor and take on software, which is one of the key words in this, making forms easy, fast, and fun, right? It's about fun. Like, it's about the colors. It's about, like, customization. It's about ease of use. It's about personality. And that's what we focus on. And we don't think you can replicate that with any other kind of – but any other software team. Like, our attention to detail is very ridiculous. We're very, very, very patient and meticulous in how we sort of approach it. We actually think software creation is I think the verb that we use is we craft our code.
It's absolutely stunning. I use it because I love it. I love how you guys thought of every detail, like even making it easy for me to explain to people what certain fields are in my form without overpowering them with information.
And Woofle has a lot of interesting ideas that we haven't even been able to fulfill yet on it. So like as a hosted solution, right? We have actually access to what does a well-performing form look like? And so one of the things we're working on is sort of an advanced statistic module and benchmarking module that will sort of, it'll analyze your form's performance and tell you, look, this is where traditionally people go wrong. This is where people stop filling out your form. This is where conversion rates taper off. This is the type of copy that usually doesn't work very well. So that sort of aggregate data that we're processing with, you know, millions of forms being created on our system is extremely valuable. And we think we can leverage that also very, very well being a sort of cloud-based service.
Okay. One more question, then we'll get into details about how you grew the business. This one comes from Mark EP, who's also watching us on Justin TV. And he's saying, what percentage did you have to give up? What percentage of your business did you have to give up to get the 100,000?
I think it was 10% for that 100,000. So it was like $1 million valuation.
So overall, you gave up 15% of your business, and the three owners own a third of the rest.
I think it's like 17 or something like that. So 7% went to Y Combinator for the seed funding, but yeah.
And you won't need funding again as far as you can see.
Oh no. We actually have this issue where venture capitalists keep calling us and we're not interested in the funding. And so we have to like, we've been actually very disappointed by the sort of like VC's take on how they think they should approach sort of successful companies or companies that they think are going to do very well. Sort of they send like an intern out there to sort of data collect the information. We can hear them typing in the background into a spreadsheet to collect info. And it's like we tell them ahead of time, like, we don't want to talk to you. We're not interested in raising any money. We're happy to establish a relationship if that's what you want. But you got to bring something to the table, and we'll call them. And they have done no homework. They don't know what the product does. They haven't signed up for the service, and they don't know our business model. They haven't read any of our articles on Particle Tree, which we publish all the time. Like, we make a website that's very easy to understand what we do, and they don't know it. And so basically, we have to pitch to them, even though we say we are not interested in pitching. And now it's become a problem where it eats our time. You know, and that's like the worst thing you can do. Like, if you want to have a valuable relationship, you don't want to waste the other person's time. Like, I've yet to wait for a VC to come and talk to me and have an idea at the table and say, look, I've looked at your business. I've looked at what you guys done. Have you thought about these? Right. And it's like, I don't hear that at all. And I don't understand, like, that's not how I would approach, like, having someone be excited about wanting to be a partner in business. So.
You know what? I had some internet entrepreneurs over at my place here in Buenos Aires, guys from the U.S., and I asked them about their experiences with specific VCs, and Mark Suster's name kept coming up as a VC who gets it. And I kept asking, what is it about him? Do you know Mark?
No, but I've heard his name several times also, and like, I don't doubt that there's some. I think Fred Wilson is probably also another great one. Yeah.
What they told me about Mark, I kept saying, what is it about Mark? What do you love about him? Why do you guys keep talking about him? And they said, he'll spend time understanding your business. That a lot of times when you talk to investors, potential investors, they don't even know your business. They don't know what you do. They haven't, as you say, they haven't even registered.
Right.
Okay, let's go on into how you got your users. You buying advertising?
No. Advertising. It's all word of mouth is how we've grown.
So the first round came from the articles that you wrote. Well, you tell me, where did the first group of people come from?
So we had Particle Tree, and we announced that we were going to build a product, and we were asking for beta users. So we got 5,000 beta users right away trying out the product. And then over time, as we were building out the product, I'd say it was like 2 or 3 weeks, we had an interface demo. So this thing didn't hook up to a database. It didn't save anything. All it was JavaScript. And it was an example of like how the interface was going to feel like. Because that was our main goal. Like, we wanted a new type of interface that when you sort of drag and drop, it felt like this is a very natural way of designing a database application. And we said, like, this works. This is exciting. Let's just put it up out there. So we started programming in January. In early February, we did a prototype demo, and it said, like, try out the service, and this is a sneak preview of what it's going to feel like. And so people were able to play around, and when they hit save, whatever, it says, thanks for trying out the demo. If you want to learn more, you can sign up for the beta testing by sending your email address. And that's like typical lead generation flow. And we had up to like 15,000 people who were interested in the service when we launched, and so we were able to email all those people. And then we got also on TechCrunch at the time, although I have to say, as great as TechCrunch is, those users and people who visit from there are the worst converting users that we've ever seen, like next to beta users, right? They're like less than 0.25%, like will convert and actually pay for the service. And our beta users, we even actually offered them lifetime 50% off for the lifetime of the product. And that was to test out sort of the billing system, because we weren't going to go, we were going to launch, and the first billing was going to happen 1 month into it for the recurring. So we thought if we did a week earlier, let the beta tester sign up early, we can get it. And we're like, okay, we can get a gauge for how much people like it. And it was really abysmal. And so when you see a 0.25% conversion rate, you're just like, we've made a mistake, right? And the thing is, those people are not your users. They are not the people that are having a specific problem, which is the problem that you're addressing and wanting to fill something out. Their problem is like, what is the next cool thing that I can play with, right? And that's as far as they will go. So it's a mistake to put like all your eggs into that basket, I think, on a big launch. Our focus has always been on slow, steady growth through spectacular customer support and spectacular experience. And so I'd say most of our efforts is in customer support. So every engineer at WooFoo has to do customer support. Everyone has to partake into it. And we do support with our seven-man team from 9 a.m. to midnight every single day, 7 days a week. And from 9 to 5, you can probably get an answer to any support request within 3 to 5 minutes. And then from
so
five.
So right now, if somebody sends you a customer support request, they're going to get an answer within 3 to 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm, probably.
What's a question? What's an issue that comes up a lot?
Well, there's lots of just typical questions about the service. Can I do this? What's possible? What's not possible? And any troubleshooting sort of stuff that happens. So, and those troubleshooting is usually they don't understand something like, how do I get a theme to work? How exactly do I sort of copy and paste, or something that. A lot of times it's lazy users, because we spent a lot of time on documentation and custom videos and FAQs and stuff, and a lot of them just don't take time to look at
stuff. Let's test this. Guys, if anyone's watching us live, can you go in and send a customer support issue? You know I would say it or not?
Go ahead.
Let's test it out. Let's ask, how can I change the design of my form, or some question like that. Chris Dritt, if you're there, can you do it? Or Will Lam, if you're there, can you do it? Brandon Watson's watching us live, but he's probably working over at Microsoft. He can't take time away from Microsoft to do that. But if somebody can do it and come back and tell me, I'm curious to see how fast a response you get. So you do customer support also?
Yeah, so on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to midnight, I do support. And then we also rotate a Wednesday day shift and weekend shifts.
Okay, all right, let's go back to how you get users. Do you have any viral marketing that's embedded into this product? Do you have any way of getting your current users to feed users?
So on the free plan, if you submit an entry, a successful entry, on the confirmation page, there's a loaner link that says powered by WooFoo, right? And so on there, there's a lot of users will upgrade to have that sort of not show, but like every time that you, you know, someone fills out your form, someone learns about WooFoo, that the form was powered by it. So there's a little bit of that built into it. But we find out that that's not where most of our conversions come from. Like most of ours come from people just coming in and signing up, and it's after they sign up for the application and they experience the service, they'll do that. We also have a good number of users after going through customer support, and they sort of experience sort of what we've gone through with them. They'll have that, you know, they'll realize, wow, these guys are really there. They're really personable and they're really nice, and I value this product.
And then they'll go evangelize for you because you gave them such great customer support. Where else are you getting users?
Those are all the locations.
So you guys don't do much blogger outreach. You're not going to ProBlogger.net and saying, hey, we can write an article about how to get more user engagement. You're not.
I've talked a couple times at some conferences, right? But that's usually, I do my best to talk about whatever topic's good for the audience and stuff. So I'll talk about relationship marketing. I'll talk about how to get better conversion rates for a freemium type app. But I don't. We don't do a lot of like proactive, like going out there. We tried to participate in as many what's it called, bar camps as possible, just to contribute back to the community. But there's just Particle Tree. We have a Twitter, and we have a normal WooFoo blog where we give out info, and then it's almost all our users. Our users are our greatest, you know, fanatics, and so it's all to them.
But you're not doing anything to encourage them, right? You just...
Well, I mean, we love them. We get excellent support. I mean, we put out features as fast as we can and give them what they want. So that's the encouragement that we supply. Yeah.
All right. It looks like Chris Dritt at 12:01 p.m. Pacific time sent an email to your support. Let's see how fast a turnaround we get. I'm also seeing that the guys on Hacker News are watching us. It sounds like somebody voted this interview to the top. I love that site. You on there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Paul Graham built the thing from the ground up, and yeah, it's hard not to keep track of everyone. And it's also, it's all our friends. So like, I try to go out and see each new Y Combinator session every time that they have one, and meet with the new guys and do like sort of a design review with the teams and stuff. And you know, that's a way to keep track of our friends also that are contributing and doing interesting stuff. And that's also some of the best minds on on the internet actually are, you know, up there putting up links and finding stuff, and the discussions, like, you can't beat them. Like, it's the best type of discussions you could ever like hope for.
Yeah, no question about it. I'm reading a discussion on Hacker News, and I say, boy, that's a smart comment. I look to see who it was who wrote it, and it's Chris Ohanian, the guy who created Reddit. So no wonder it's a smart discussion, the type of people that they get in there. If you guys listening to us and you're not on Hacker News, then you should get on there now.
It's like a liberal arts, like, you know, dream session that had like that going on. I had that resource.
What about converting free users into paid users? How do you do that well? A lot of the guys who are watching us from Hacker News want to make that conversion so they can bring in some revenue.
So I give a very interesting kind of fun talk about this, and I call and we call it relationship marketing, but like almost in a literal sense. So our approach is as if you're trying to date someone, right? So we approach new users as if we're on like a first date. We approach existing users as if we're in a marriage. And then we looked at all kinds of science and research to see what are the best things to do in those situations. So on a first date, it's all about first impressions, right? It's all those first moments. Like, it's storytelling. And everyone remembers, if I was to ask you to tell you, like, when, tell me the story of like how you met your wife or your first date with someone. Everyone remembers that with detail. Like, they're looking for those moments. And you can't get anything wrong because you don't have the value of an established relationship to get benefit of the doubt. So for example, if you are on a first date with someone and they start like picking your nose right in front of you, it's over. You're not continuing that relationship. But if you're in like a 30-year marriage with someone and like see your husband like sitting on the bar lounge or like picking his nose, you kind of shrug it off and go, he's got a heart of gold at least, right? Like, you don't have that forgiveness. So our goal is to be meticulous on all those first moments. And we look at everywhere that a user might experience this for the first time. So it's not just like landing pages, which is where most people focus on, or the home page. The very first email we ever sent out, the first time you come to an empty screen, the first time you create a form, first time you create a report, like all the first times, like first time you have trouble with the service, customer support, every single one of those moments are crafted by us to make sure that it is memorable.
Like give me more details. How do you do that? How do you make that first impression memorable?
You know what? You try to think of like, where do you see a sense of wonder in something? Whether it's in a book, I try to find inspiration in anything. Anything I was like, wow, I can't help but smile. And so when you first sign up for WooFoo and you create that first account, we have this little loading screen, and it's not necessary, but it says, you know, assembling WooFoo powers. And like it does this kind of like loading graphic, and it's like an umbrella lighting up and an airplane and like a flower and like, and it's like they have nothing to do with service, but it's like someone's like, all right, this is going to be a little different. And then when it comes up, there's like there's no forms created. And so on that control panel, it says, holy tabula rasa, you don't have any forms. Start creating one now, right? And so it's like that sort of copy, which we're very careful about. It's not about being funny. It's about being friendly. Because first dates are about making friends with someone and not jumping into the deep end and not saying like, you don't have any forms. You have three left. Start paying if you want more than three. Like, that's a really sort of antagonistic copy. And it does what it's supposed to do, but it doesn't feel right. And so it's all about feelings for us. Customer support, for example. We added this dropdown called emotional state. And so in addition to, like, what's your problem? Where did you find it? What's your browser? What's your operating system? We say, what's your emotional state? And we had actually heard this from Kathy Sierra. She was talking about there's this disconnect, right, between people's emotions when they're having a problem with the service and the copy and sort of the feeling of the support. Like, it's all super bright and fun and like goes in the brain. People are like, I'm fucking having a problem. And so what ends up happening is, like, if you knew how people were feeling, like if someone were to come into your customer support department, like at Target, right, in person, you would act differently based on how they look, you know, with their faces. So we're like, well, we can't do face recognition from the web, but we can just directly ask them. So we have emotional state and system tell us, like, are you confused? Are you angry? Blah, blah, blah. And we were just seeing what it would do. We didn't think we were going to use the data for anything. It was just curious to see what would happen if we just sort of know the states and see how they correlate. And one of the really surprising things was that lots of people filled that out. Like, it was totally optional. And so it was like 72% filled out the emotional state dropdown field. In comparison, the browser, just tell us what browser it is that you're having a problem, was only 74.5%. Meaning that two people, in order to solve a technical support problem, people felt that their emotion state was just as valid or necessary to figure out how to solve the problem as it was what browser it was. The other really interesting thing about putting that drop down was, like, people like had a really emotional impact by it. They saw the drop down like, wow, I think these guys are really going to care. Like, they're going to look at that and they're going to make a decision about the process. But also, because language is so like inappropriate for expressing emotions and what's going on at the time, there's only very few things you can do with the English language to sort of show off this emotion. So that's like, you know, there's adjectives, right? But it's also caps locks and exclamation marks. And we followed this and we noticed both of those drop down. Less people are writing in all caps to us, right? And there's not as many exclamation marks, and people aren't using as strong language. Like, they're very calm and rational. They're like, say, I'm furious or I'm angry. And there's like a really calm, rational explanation of what's going on and what's going on there. It's like they were able to diffuse the emotion through that because they're showing it and then sort of resolve the problem. And the result is that it's so much nicer for us, right? As an experience for the people doing customer support, because like, we're not trying to make you angry, but the fact that you're sort of like helping us with your problem and you're not having to use all this weird strong language and writing in all caps to us, we are more calm and we're more rational when we sort of approach it. So like, yeah, it's those kinds of details we're always trying to think of, like, how can we get at the emotional core and strengthen our relationship? Thank you cards was another one that we tried to do.
Thank you cards.
Yes, the weekly thank you cards that we write.
How do you keep the tone consistent? I mean, from the beginning, like you said, when I create a form on your site, you have kind of a fun tone there. And throughout the site, through customer support, through when I go and create my fourth form, through when I pay, it seems to all have the same voice. Is it only possible because you're the only one creating these pages, you personally, Kevin?
Well, I do all the design for the site, but everyone always looks at it. Everyone on the team looks at it. And you get a feel. I mean, once you start creating all this stuff, you get a feel for what the WooFoo aesthetic is supposed to be. What is the WooFoo voice? And I don't know. I have to say, definitely, it helps that you have like sort of a curator, or I guess a design dictator. We've always been interested in like how would things would play out if we had two designers and how things sort of play out for that. But this is the kind of software that I've always wanted to design, like software that was going to be kind of fun and gamey and sort of like it's a really boring idea, like database creation and management. But I was like, there's a way that you can do this where, like, you know, you can smile and not be reminded constantly that you are in a cubicle and that you're wearing a tie and stuff.
All right, speaking of a cubicle, I've been looking over your shoulder throughout this interview. I'm seeing your bed. I'm seeing a cat running around. I'm guessing we're in your bedroom, right?
Yeah, so we don't have a central office. Everyone works from home at WooFoo. And on Fridays, we get together at each other's houses, and then we meet there, and that's when the team meets. But we do video chat, and we do regular chat, and we use Dropbox to sort of manage everything and do everything remotely. But we're very picky about our teams, though, because of that. So everyone has to be very self-driven and very disciplined in how they approach their work. But works great for us. We find
and
it finesse.
I know, Kevin, that you've experimented with this, right? You've done some experiments on. Can you tell people about that?
Yeah, so in addition to experimenting with designs and also programming and coding aspects, we try to experiment with our sort of business model. Like, we don't take anything for granted. We try to learn as much as possible. So we started off with research for, like, what is the best way that we should be working? Because if you're going to be a small team and you're determined to be a small team and keep as much percentage and shares of your company as possible, you have to be efficient. And we were like, we want every percentage of efficiency and productivity that we can squeeze out. And so we looked at 5-day work weeks. We looked at 4-day work weeks. We looked at 3-day work weeks. We worked at all different types of hours and rotating schedules and stuff. And we settled on this sort of 4.5-day work week schedule. And the way it works is that Monday through Thursday, everyone is supposed to do the work that they do minus the support day that you have. If on the day you have support, you have your only job is to sort of, you know, address the customer. But all the other days is do programming and programming alone, or design and development. And anything that might be a distraction. So anything that you can't resolve within 2 minutes, like in a conversation with someone that basically requires a meeting, it gets tabled off. Like, everyone has a list of stuff that they have to do, and you should, like, just go on to your next item, and we'll table it off to Friday. And then Friday is sort of a half day, so it's sort of like more relaxing. People meet at about 2 o'clock at someone's house. Someone, like, sort of has snacks and all this stuff, and we do like our weekly scrum. So we go over everything you did from the week prior. Why didn't you get anything accomplished? And what are you going to do for next week? And then we also write thank you cards and stuff. But forcing it to be only one meeting, and we also tend to also do most of our sort of business development meetings also on a Friday. But what it ends up being is, like, it's much more relaxed in terms of you get more out of your sort of weekend out of it. But also, people are a lot more intense about with their schedule on those 4 days. And it's really nice that we're able to limit ourselves to one meeting a week, because that's something that we always hated working in the government. So,
by the way, I got an email or a Twitter message back from Chris Dritt. Saying, all right, so the first tweet that he sent to us said that he sent you guys a support email at 12:01 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And then soon after that, he tweeted at me and he said, at 12:02 p.m. Pacific Time, he got a response to his question from WooFoo. Did you tell me the truth? While we were talking, did you send your tech support people an email telling them, or a message telling them to respond right away?
I think they're actually, they are watching probably right now.
I see.
They were braced for it. I'm pretty sure Andrew is going to be mad at me later on. He's on shift today.
All right. I'm looking at my notes to see if we talked about everything that I promised people we talk about. We talked about design and how you got it. We talked about the office hours. We talked about I pushed you to say how much money you made, and of course you said no. You said that you weren't willing to tell us. And by the way, for anyone who's watching, there's no sandbagging here. Kevin and I had a conversation before this interview. I said, do you feel comfortable talking to people about how much money you make? He said, no. I said, all right. I often will ask that, and then I'll ask in the interview, and you can say no so that everyone else gets to hear that you're not willing to say it.
I appreciate the effort. You're not the first, though.
I'm not looking to push or anything. I'll tell you the truth that sometimes I've gone back and edited out people's numbers when they said that they couldn't have it out there. I can't do it anymore because it's too much work. There are times when, like Lynda.com, I know what their revenues are. I specifically didn't ask because I asked her before the interview if she felt comfortable talking about it. She said no, and we shouldn't bring it up. And I said, okay. So even though I knew the answer to that, my goal wasn't to expose her business. My goal was just to learn as much as possible. And so that's what I'm trying to do here. So there it is. Is there anything I missed? Anything that entrepreneurs need to know from your experience?
Oh, don't forget to have fun. I mean, we try to design software that has fun, but we've geared everything also to make our company fun. Like, we actually had one employee for the first year that he worked for us. He didn't take any vacation time off. Like, we give generous, like, it's not tracked that hours off. It's all about, do you get your stuff done? And if you get it done, we don't care how much time you take off. And he didn't take any off for the first year. And we're like, Alex, what's the deal? And he's like, I took Christmas off. And I was like, no, everyone got the Christmas break off. Like, what did you do? He's like, I took one day off to do like fantasy football at a hotel. And he like flew immediately back to be back for work. So we're like, you know what? You've generated more value to us than any other person in the company. And because of that, we want to reward you for that. And so we said, we're paying you, we're making you go on a vacation, research something, take your wife on it, and we'll pay for it. So it's extremely important to us that, like, the health of our employees, that they remember. Like,
aren't you missing opportunities because of that? It sounds like you're not experimenting with ways to convert people to get them to push them to pay you. You're not being aggressive about bringing new people on your site. You're not being as aggressive as you could be with your employees. I interviewed Jason Calacanis. The guy's famous for pushing his people to death. And then just before they die, he says, come on out to taekwondo classes because I want to make you into a fighter too.
So we've done a lot of research about productivity, and we find out that crunching is the worst thing you can do. Like, if you crunch somebody, if you push someone to work extremely hard, you'll get more work out of them. But in the long, what ends up happening is when the work's over, they have to have a recovery rate, and the recovery rate is much longer in the area on the curve than the actual
work. What about
this?
You see where you started curving down with your hand like this? Mm-hmm. How about at that point you fire them? Because at that point they start to tire out and you go, goodbye, I'm going to go hire somebody else. You don't like working for me anyway because I'm too high energy for you. Go work for someone else who's going to be a little calmer. I'm going to hire someone else who can keep that curve going up.
There are companies that are like that, and that will never be us. So,
because it's just not your personality, or because you're trying to build
a long-term relationship? Yeah, it's not a personality, but it's about establishing long-term relationships. Like, that is our goal. That's how we plan on winning, right? Establishing long-term relationships with our users, our customers, have them keep coming back, our employees, so they never leave. Like, it's extremely valuable, like, the amount of investment that we put into them, right? We don't want them to burn out. We don't want them to be frustrated for it. And the same thing with our users. It takes a lot of time to teach a user how to use our software. And to have them just go away because, like, we're rude to them in customer support, or we're off, or because, you know, we don't respond, or we don't do features, really, I think it's a mistake, right? It's a really bad way to run a company and to be a person. And I think those are always, you spend a third of your life almost, if not more, working, right? To spend a third of your life being the kind of person that you kind of like despise, or like is frustrated by, or is like angry at, like, that's no way to live or work. And so that's just how we approach things.
All right, thanks. I've got to ask you so many more questions, but I'm looking here at the time. We've spent about an hour and 12 minutes on video conference here together. At some point, I've got to cut it off, but I'm dying to ask even more questions. Like, for example, the two investors, are they pushing you for an exit at some point? Doesn't sound like they necessarily want one.
No, they would love to see an exit, but on our own time and, you know, in a way that we're comfortable. They love the way we work and how we innovate. We're thinking and working constantly all the time with the three founders. And so it's not good. Investors trust the people. Like, they form a relationship with the team members and they say, these people are going to be able to do something amazing, and I got to let them do that. Like, it doesn't do any good to, like, constantly looking over the shoulder and want something back in return. Like, it's a weird way. And they're just not the kind of investors that will ever be like that.
Paul Graham, Paul Buchheit, are they still advisors? Do they still help you think through the business?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of advice do you get from them? What kind of feedback?
Yeah, it depends on whatever advice that we want to get. Usually, sometimes we've had meetings established thanks with them. And usually it's just reporting. They just encouragement. I don't know. We're fairly also very independent. Like, they kind of wanted us to stay in California, but we weren't interested in that. We came back to Florida. And so it's mostly, you know, that we're going in the right direction and making sure we're thinking about the right stuff. But it's been a while since we needed any sort of heavy-handed advice since we've been doing this for about 4 years. So,
what kind of advice do you get from Paul Buchheit? What's he like?
He's a really funny guy. You know that? His idea is, he's always like worrying about, is the market sort of big enough? Like, are you thinking in terms of like the percentage of the pie that you want? Is the pie big enough that when you get a percentage of it, that, you know, you can do well and run off on your feet? And he's always also interested in like toppling the big guys. So he's always having us look at those kind of features to be like, you know what? What are the big guys that are, so like Microsoft and Adobe and stuff, and like how can you sort of do better than them in that respect with a completely different approach? So
the big guys are Microsoft and Adobe in
at the time that when we first was like talking about the idea with him and stuff like that. So he was really excited about that. You know, we could sort of turn things on its head.
So what, the traditional, what ideas did he have for beating them?
Oh no, he liked our ideas for how we were going to beat them. So his approach is to always think about things like that.
Okay. All right. How can people contact you if they weren't happy with the list of questions that I had for you and have even more questions?
Oh, if you have any questions about Wufoo and such, you can contact us at support@wufoo.com. If you have questions for me about sort of like how we run the business stuff, you can contact me at kevin@wufoo.com.
All right. And what part of Florida are you in?
We're in Tampa, Florida.
You get together for meetups and bar camps in Florida?
So people we try to go to the Orlando one, the Tampa one. We try to make it to the Jacksonville one, as many as we can.
All right, so people can come and see you in person there too. I'm always pushing my audience to go and meet the people who I interview in person, or send them an email, or send them.
We'll actually be in the San Francisco this weekend for the Crunchies. We got nominated for best bootstrapped startup, and so we're really excited about that. So we're hoping we do well.
All right, so vote for them over the next – is there still time to vote?
Yeah, next couple of days.
Vote for them over the next couple of days for Crunchy. And I've got to say this to Justin TV. Thank you guys for promoting me and getting such a big audience for me. And to the person who submitted me to Hacker News, next time submit the Mixergy link, not the Justin TV link. Justin TV gets tons of traffic already. I could use more viewers on Mixergy.com. Is that inappropriate for me to say, Kevin? Should I act above?
It's just like something I would say.
All right. Kevin, thank you all. Thank you for doing this interview. Thank you all for watching us. Looking forward to your feedback. Keep sending it in, and I'll see you in the comments.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
Cool, buddy. Thanks. Cool, buddy. Bye.
Bye.